No one will be that eternal priestly bride but she who has made herself ready.
For the battle is raging.
Hello again. Hello, hello, and welcome to one of the final chapters of the Eternal Unveiling. We described a lot last week, and I really went into depth. And if you're just happening on this recording, please do go back to the last podcast before this one, because I was explaining the third fullness and the eyes that were searching out the Father continually, and every time they get a revelation of the Father, they cry holy. And this same creature a friend of mine saw searching out the saints of God with the same awe. What does God see in these broken vessels that would cause him to turn all of his attention and pay such a price to win man? And I began to talk about the only way that I can come close to understanding is how a woman feels about her child. There's something in a woman that desires to serve this little, helpless, weak human, and she desires it more than anything else that life has to offer. And you can give her everything, but without a child, she's totally unfulfilled. When she finally has this child, she's consumed with love and instincts. This baby does not show recognition of mom or her endless toil, and he or she does not quit crying so mom can sleep. And it doesn't give her a day off. It doesn't say please or thank you. Nevertheless, mom is consumed with meeting every need and loving it without a return hug. Well, this love is like an obsession. You cannot think of much else. And when the baby cries, you are filled with compassion. And when it hurts, you hurt. Nothing is more overwhelming than knowing your baby is sick or in pain and you are helpless to fix it. From this reference frame, I can understand God's need, if I may say it like that, for I feel that God above all else is the all in all, could not have all that he desired without having us. And how can we ever begin to fill the heart of God with our return love? Well, he is so big, so his need must be really big, as he himself is, for the Bible tells us God is love. And like a mother, he keeps giving and loving, but every parent's heart leaps when the baby finally recognizes them above all other humans. And when only you can give that baby a sense of security and peace. And then the day comes when the child can say, I love you. Oh, the thrill. But as the child grows, it begins to take on an independent nature. How many times my children wanted me to let them do it by themselves? Then they turn into a young adult, and you become the enemy, and they love their friends and desire their company to yours, and you lay down rules, and they break them, and there's constant tension as they desire to rule their own life, but you know they're not yet ready, so you protect them from themselves, and you make choices for them, and they kick and scream all the way, and you try to keep them in church, you try to shield them from the wrong influence. And it's not wanted or appreciated, but you do it anyway. You hope one day they will get it. You imagine the day that they will walk back in that door and desire your love and attention again. They want and value your opinion and your viewpoint. The occasional phone call comes, Dad, Mom, I really miss you guys. And you know, of course, by this time, you are no longer needed in the same sense as the baby needed you, but you have worked your way out of a job. And sometimes it hurts. You walk into that empty room that once held laughter and noise and messes, and now everything is clean the way you left it, and now you look forward to the occasional visit or holiday. Well, can we relate to God's thrill of hearing our voice and loving the times that we put everything else aside to be with him? And what a thrill it must be when we stop talking about ourselves every time we're together, and we turn to him and say, Daddy, how are you feeling? What would you enjoy doing today? Can I do something for you? Or we drop the busy activity of the day and make time for that phone call. Hey, Daddy, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. I remember that at the beginning of my sleepless trial, that Lydia, my friend, walked over to me one night and said, I saw you in a vision, looking intently at the Word of God, and light was coming from behind you and shining on the pages of the Word. She had just prayed for me and shared that our pastor, Pastor Lynn, had walked over to me, not knowing of our conversation. She had just prayed for me, and he came over and put his hand on me and said, Revelation, Lord. Lydia and I just looked at each other in astonishment, because to add this word from what Lydia had just said and Pastor Lynn, I had an experience. I went home that night and redid my bed covers and got everything ready for night. And during the night, I got up to go to the restroom, and when I got back to my room, I looked and saw a Bible tape sitting on my bed. And I didn't have any of these tapes in my room at the time. I asked my husband, Billy, the next day if he would put it, if he had put it there. It was a tape that played the reading of the Bible. And he said, no. And I said, are you sure? He said, of course, honey. Well, I knew, because, first of all, there were no Bible tapes in my room at that time. I had them in another place. And I knew I'd already straightened my covers. And there it was, sitting there perfectly on my side of the bed. And I knew an angel had placed that Bible tape on the end of the bed as a nudge to get into the Word more. And he wished to illuminate my understanding. And that's where this book came from. He wanted me to write this book. He wants you to know this. And I paid a great price to be able to get this revelation. But the Lord had to take me through that avenue. And so I pray today that you are understanding where we are in this time in history. All that I've been sharing is part of that time in the Word. And he has poured so much into me, and I can't remember it all. I had written scattered notes around the house and kept thinking I need to bring it all together. And then I got a phone call from a friend who told me she had a dream. And long story short, it was a message to me to get this revelation written and printed. And at this time, there was a coming together. We were having a coming together, and the Lord said to me one night in church, would you have been awed watching me create at the beginning of time? And when I took nothing, he said, and made everything, and I recounted the whole creation story and imagined, or he showed me in my imagination, as it were, myself as an onlooker, and he said to me, this beginning, the creation of the earth and the universes, is this beginning is small in comparison to the grand finale. Wait till you see my explosion of fulfillment. That's what he called it, an explosion of fulfillment. And the reason I created all this will be seen before this book is finished, he says, before the time is over. And it will bring full pleasure to my heart. He said, all my dreams for man will come true with nothing left to mar the vision. Well, I began to understand in a new way that unless a seed dies, it abides alone. And Jesus had to die to bring home many sons to glory. Without that sacrifice, Jesus would have returned home alone. But his word, Jesus being the word, would not return empty, and it would not return void. And in the heart of every human, there's an intense yearning to be fulfilled. We look for a point where we are enveloped in complete love and value, pleasure, and fullness our whole lives. We look for that moment of completeness. And as God's need for completion parallels our groan for completion and fulfillment, it will add to the big bang that will occur when need meets fulfillment, when we are no longer anticipating. God's fulfillment and ours lay in seed form and could not live until Jesus came in death. And inside of the lone seed, the all alone seed, were all the elements of what would be needed for completion. Though it's wrapped up in plans and possibilities, it still needs three components to be complete. It needs the death of the flesh, the outer shell of the seed. And by flesh, I mean the death to the self-life that overrides the Christ life. And this death releases all the potential hiding inside the seed, because every seed has a DNA of what it's to produce. And once the first step has been taken, that is us yielding ourselves to the dark and dirty grave of the self-life, leaving the shell of the self behind to go into the realm of fullness and completion, the next two things can begin to process. And our need for union with the bridegroom creator causes a root system to go down deep into the place of our death. This most necessary commitment to the soil or the grave keeps us from forgetting the whole purpose of the seed. And the soil and our being one with it causes us to realize that death to self is really life. We then understand that to live is Christ and to die is gain. And the soil, the darkness, the confinement, the deserts of our life, the trials, is not our enemy. Death to self is merely the beginning point. Our roots in that grave of humility continue to sustain us and strengthen us. Our roots will continue to remind us that all sustenance continues to come from our agreement and attachment to the death process. It also reminds us that union with God depends on us holding to the cross. Without the cross in our life, we would not be able to be strong enough to produce a lasting harvest. And when you study the tabernacle of Moses, you see that the furniture within the holy place and the Holy of Holies was first made from wood and then covered with gold. And many today want the gold, Jesus and all of his beauty. But please, dear friends, realize that gold was made to be very soft so that it can be pliable. And Jesus was completely surrendered to the will of the Father. He said without the Father, he could do nothing. That gold that we know, as Jesus laid down self-will, so he could be bent into any shape that was needed. So in order for God to complete the gold, it has to be wrapped around something stronger, something firmer, and even earthy. That substance was wood. It was a cross. He was forming something lasting from the wood of earth, which is one of the least materials of earth in some forms. We would prefer looking at flowers or the sky. But he was forming something lasting from the wood of the earth and the gold of heaven. And it would be strong enough to last through eternity. It would be so strong that the gates of hell would not have power over it. Jesus told us to take up our cross and follow him. I only know one place where the cross of Jesus was taken. It was to Calvary. It only had one use, death. Today, there are more martyrs than any time in history. Are we not privileged enough to join the ranks if called upon? The cross was the earthly substance on which the gold was to be formed. The wood of the cross represented the very thing that he came to redeem, man. No wonder the blind man that Jesus prayed for described men as trees walking. The gold was the righteousness of God as it formed itself and displayed its greatest beauty that day by wrapping itself around that which was earth and bringing beauty out of ashes of the fallen world. Now we must take up our cross and complete the picture of redemption. As Jesus purified a fallen world and allowed it to form his death, so we must sacrifice ourselves to any and all forms of surrender, even unto death, if God ordains it, in order to bring the gospel to others. We too have a cross, a people to bring into the kingdom, a cross to bear, and he will take the gold of his righteousness and wrap it around our surrender, and it will become the altar of sacrifice. How do we view sacrifice? Do we dread it, fear it? Be careful lest we deny it. How do we see the sacrifice of Jesus? Jesus' sacrifice was to purchase a whole world's redemption if they chose to take it. He used his precious blood to keep me from hell and death. I look at that cross and I see an eternal God becoming a curse for me so that I could be a bride for him. The Jews to this day look at the cross as a sign of a curse. They think that when they see Christians wearing a cross, they are cursing themselves. The Bible repeats this legend by explaining that the saying in Jesus' time was, "Cursed is everyone that hangs from a tree." It all depends on the truth that has been shown to you. I see the cross as the instrument of deliverance from the curse. In Philippians 3:18, we read that those that oppose the gospel are enemies of the cross. It makes you wonder who's opposing the cross these days. Who's teaching self being propped up instead of crucified? Wow. If we're opposing suffering altogether, we're opposing the cross. Because as much as the gospel is a picture of mercy and joy to the Christian, it is also the picture of surrender and all that surrender entails. Jesus did not pick living a full life of riches over dying. He saw the greater prize, and I believe that he sold all he had to buy his pearl of great price. It was his bride. And if we oppose obedience on any level or any realm that he requires, we are opposing the gospel. We become enemies to the idea of sacrifice and obedience, which is the very nature of the Son of God. You are to become just like him. As he and the Father were one, we are to be one. So how can we become enemies to the idea of sacrifice and obedience when that was the very nature of Jesus? The Bible tells us that the feet of him that spreads the gospel is beautiful. If a missionary comes to my village and has come through beatings and great persecution to bring me the good news, the gospel, I will rejoice at such a great gift. To you who are called upon to give it all, your cross is beautiful to the recipients of your sacrifice. But perhaps you are among so many who think that sacrifice is for the guy in India, not for me. Well, our cross is not merely one of suffering through friends and family who mistreat or misjudge us. We must grow up, friends, and if we are to be the bride, he is calling us to die to fear, to die to jealousy, to lust, to envy, and even remorse. If we are not looking more and more like him every day, we are not taking up our cross. Neither are we in a position of denying the world, and we're going to be caught in a position where we will deny Christ. Without the soil and the death of the seed, there would be no tree. Indeed, there would be no fruit. And when we go through a very dark but necessary time in our life, we need to understand that this is a time of new vision and growth. And if we hang on to the soil, this root system is the strength of the whole tree. Our roots in that grave of humility continue to sustain us and strengthen us. Our roots remind us that all sustenance continues to come from our agreement and attachment to the death process. It also reminds us that union with God depends on us holding on to the cross. Then the third step can begin. Well, that's all for today. This has been a tremendous time. And as I've been teaching this to you, I have had an experience with the Lord where he has commended me on writing this book, and I'm being blessed all over again by sharing it with you. I hope you continue to listen to this and put it in your spirit, but to listen to it over and over again till it becomes part of who you are. Knowing what Jesus intends for the bride, can it be any more beautiful than a bride in full apparel? Well, God bless you. See you in the final and last podcast of the Eternal Unveiling. Until then, the Lord be with you.
This podcast has been a production of Brenda Price Ministries. Evangelist Brenda Price has more materials available on this subject, including her most recent book titled The Eternal Unveiling. It can be found at our website, along with other resources we have made available. The website can be found at brendapriceministries.weebly.com.